Welcome back to the Red Zone podcast from the Badger Beat team at the Wisconsin State Journal. I'm UW men's basketball beat writer Abby Schnabel, and I'm going to be flying solo today, so bear with me as I am freshly off the plane home from Vegas and staying at my parents' house where they have two of my brothers living with them. I only have two brothers, I don't know why I said it like that, but they also have three dogs, and I have a dog, so there's chaos, so bear with me if you hear background noise. I'm recording this in my childhood bedroom. The UW men's basketball team won their first ever Maui Invitational just yesterday, November 24th, Wednesday. I'm just going to start off with a nice little recap here. They played Texas A&M in the first round and defeated them 69-58. Arguably the biggest game of the week was when they upset number 12 Houston 65-63. And then they won the Maui Invitational by defeating St. Mary's. And let's just start with the fact that all three of those games were so much fun to watch. And I could probably pick little different things about each one. I do have to give Houston some credit. And I know I hate saying that because it's such a coaching cliche. But you got to give them credit because had they had two more seconds at the end of the game, they probably would have won. Shed had the ball with like 4 seconds left, drove down the lane, and just couldn't get the pass off to finish it down low. And genuinely, the Badgers didn't play very well in the second half after dominating the first half, but that domination in the first half carried them to the victory, which allowed them to head to the championship round against St. Mary's, which was another fun matchup. The teams are so similar in that they're both very defensively oriented, and then they both know how to stretch the court pretty well, can hit threes down low, and it was just fun to see UW play a team that's so much like them, and it was close too. And I've always loved a good close game because I think they're a little bit more fun, makes it harder on the deadlines, but you know, it was fun to watch, and then UW ended up pulling it together down the stretch and won the Maui Invitational for the first time in program history. I was there for all three games. I hope you followed along with the coverage we had on Madison.com and in the State Journal. Johnny Davis won MVP of the tournament, and that was just a fantastic moment because the team's posing for pictures, and then they're just hanging out, you know, talking, looking at the big plaque, talking about how they did, whatever it was, and they were gathered on the court, and on the overhead, they announced that Johnny Davis won the MVP, and he did not hear them at all, and it took a couple different teammates to be like, Johnny, you won MVP, which much deserved. He averaged 23.7 points and 6.7 rebounds over all three games, a career high 30 points against Houston, which again is huge because Houston is the number 12 team at the time of recording this. And then Tyler Wall also made the all-tournament team, which was announced at 12:30 in the morning on Thanksgiving Day. And both players totally deserved it. They combined to score 52.8% points. That's 103 of 195 points of the team's points over the whole tournament. And they just genuinely dominated on both sides of the court. Sure, they had little mistakes there, but leads me to my next point. Some of the biggest takeaways from the tournament, at least in my mind, I think Guard talked about this a lot in the press conference, and I think you saw it specifically with Davis and Wall, but on the team as a whole. This team is very gritty, and it's very resilient, and yes, I'm going to make the nitty-gritty joke because it was in my head all week, and you know, I'm new to Madison, I've been in nitty-gritty, but it's just kind of funny that Guard has kind of defined the identity of this team as gritty and resilient when there's the restaurant right down the street. I think you saw it a lot. I think they're a young team, and it's hard to keep up against more experienced teams. And all three of the teams they played had at least a year on them average age wise, if not two. And then St. Mary's was a team full of returners, and UW only has three guys who got substantial minutes last year. So seeing them battle against more experienced teams, I think we saw a lot more good things than bad things. Starting with the defense. The defense was very strong. I mean, holding Houston to just 63 points when they've been averaging upper 60s, lower 70s all season. Chucky Hepburn, we saw a lot of some of those intangible things, forcing turnovers down low. He had a couple really good turnovers down underneath the basket against St. Mary's that helped the Badgers kind of gain some momentum and circle back and figure out what they needed to do. Crowell, Stephen Crowell, I'm a big fan of his, as I feel like he's on every single rebound you can find, offensive, defensive, and he's almost always getting at least a finger on the ball. And then Davis and Wall were just on both sides of the court doing everything, leading in rebounds, points, and, you know, they also couldn't have done it without Brad Davison. He may not have been the biggest leader on the stat sheet, however, he... And you might not have been able to see this on TV, but he was giving a lot of pep talks on the court during some of those media timeouts and taking the time to kind of like, let's settle down, guys, let's figure it out. And I talked to him after the game, and he said that's the biggest thing that he's here to do, is he wants to help ground this team and figure out how they can play how they need to. And, you know, when you're trailing against St. Mary's in the championship game with about 5 minutes left, you need some of those grounding moments to kind of turn around and figure out what you're doing well, how you can come around. And Tyler Wall said it best, their defense turned into their offense. Another cliche that I don't like, but it was true. They were defensively strong. They let up a bunch of wide open shots, but, you know, it happens. But the defense looks good, and it's going to continue to look good. The other thing they need to figure out is their shooting. They finished 21 of 56 from the field and 3 of 12 from three-point range against St. Mary's, which not ideal, but, you know, they hung in there. Their defense really kept them in the mix. The biggest thing is they know how to make momentum-changing shots. Lauren Bowman went on a singular 5-0 run that eventually became an 8-0 run with Brad Davison in the second half, and that was the moment to me that really felt like the Badgers had decided that this was their game. They were going to win. And then just the genuine joy on their faces when they won, because I know Jim and I talked on the podcast last week that we did not expect the Badgers to go 3-0. We were expecting 2-1 with that one loss likely being against Houston. That's a tough draw in the second round. But, you know, this team is young, and if they're figuring out how to play together this early in the season, I kind of can't wait to see them grow throughout the rest of the season. And, you know, the only two players you're really losing at the end of the season are Brad Davison and Chris Vogt. Huge players on the team, but there's a lot of key pieces sticking around. So that leads me to the last thing I was planning on discussing, and I asked all of you to send me questions. Got a couple that I picked out here and there. I'm going to start with @Trev_Diesel. He said, "Hey, Abby, you said in the last pod that it would be great if the Badgers went 2-1. Were we ever expecting 3-0? And I kind of touched on this already. I don't think I was. I don't think Jim was. And I value Jim's opinion very strongly on this, as he has covered the team for quite some time now. And I even messaged him before the Houston game, and I said, do you think they can pull up an upset? And we both agreed that we didn't think it was likely. You know, the only other team that they had really played that up until this point that was a highly regarded team was Providence, and they lost. Granted, Johnny Davis isn't in the mix, and that's a huge part of why they won against Houston. But I think we just hadn't seen enough to be like, yes, they could pull off this win. So no, we weren't ever expecting 3-0, but the Badgers just did a lot of things right. They were able to shut down Marcus Sasser. They were able to shut down Kyler Edwards. There were so many players during this tournament that they really zoned in on that kind of caused the other teams to stutter and to stumble and not really know how to recover. And I think, again, that's something you see from a lot of experienced teams. So seeing these young guys, I mean, the average age on this team is 19 and a half. Seeing these young guys battle, and it was a battle through and through against Houston, except for maybe in the first half, but that second half was a battle all the way. And seeing them be able to bounce back, be able to kind of just dig their feet into the sand and keep going, it makes me really, really excited to see what's going to happen this season. The next question was from at Dave Hadler, and he asked me what the updated status of Jacoby Neath was, and does it look like he will be able to play against Georgia Tech or Marquette, which are the team's next games, Georgia Tech on December 1st and Marquette on December 4th. And here's the thing, I didn't have the chance to ask in the press conference. There was kind of a lot going on after, you know, they won the Maui Invitational, when not a lot of people, and I'd honestly say including them, thought that they would win. So there was a lot of chaos going. Here's what I can tell you, though, is he has been on the court every single game during warm-ups and shooting around. They've classified it as a lower body injury. That's what UW Athletics has told us. So I don't know exactly what's going on. They've said it's day-to-day, which makes me think that it's not too serious, but obviously it's a lingering something or other that is keeping him out of the game. Is it likely that he plays against Georgia Tech or Marquette? I think it's possible. I'm not sure if he does or doesn't, but again, it's just so hard to tell when we don't get all of the information for the injury. And then someone else asked, how does Jacoby Neath entering back in the game impact the minutes of guys like Carter Gilmore, Ben Carlson? And that's a really good question, because I think we've seen a lot of good things from players like Ben Carlson and Carter Gilmore, but I also feel like the thing that they lack is the sturdiness that a more experienced player like Jacoby Neath has. So I definitely think they maybe get shifted down a little bit. They don't have quite as few minutes. Carter Gilmore maybe a little bit more than Ben Carlson, because Ben Carlson is really that relief man for the centers when they get into foul trouble, and for the four. And Jacoby Neath plays a two or a three typically. And so I think you could see that impacting how the guards play. I don't necessarily think you see Chucky and Hepburn and Lauren Bowman on the court together once Jacoby is healthy. But it's also so hard to say, because we've only seen him play in one game. And that one game was against St. Francis College Brooklyn, which wasn't a very good team. So I don't really know what to expect from Jacoby. And then the last question is kind of paired together. At Dave Hadler and at Sports Tweets BS1 had the same vein, is where do you see this team ending up at the end of the year? Do you think they will outplay their prediction of finishing 10th in the Big Ten? And then the other one aspect of that, what is the ceiling of this team for what you've seen so far? Sweet 16 or a first round exit, maybe Elite Eight? And I have so many thoughts, but I want to say that it's still so early. They've only played six games, and granted, those six games were against at least four of those six games were against really tough opponents and well-matched opponents at that. So I think the team is going to do better than everyone expected, but how that translates into Big Ten play, I'm not really sure, simply because the teams that they've played up until this point are not super similar to Big Ten teams. You know, Houston relies on a lot of its guard play, same with St. Mary's, and the Big Ten is known for its centers, the Kofi Coburns, the Hunter Dickinsons, you can even put E.J. Liddell in there from Ohio State. Those are big guys, big experienced guys down low that the Big Ten typically is known for. And I think UW is really good from what we've seen at shutting down guards, but I don't think that they have really had the experience of a big man. The closest they got was in Providence, and we saw that Stephen Crowell and Chris Vogt got into early foul trouble, which is nerve-wracking because that was the first real big we saw, and Providence isn't necessarily as good as Michigan or Illinois. So you got to take it for what it's worth. They had two really big games. I think they are going to be stronger than we anticipated this season, especially because coming into the season, we didn't really know. And now we're just kind of see them coming into their own. So I think they finish above 10th in the Big Ten, if I had to say it. I don't know how high. I think they're definitely still, in my head, more of a bubble team. I think they'll need a couple more big, almost quote-unquote surprising wins to really secure their spot. But I do think the early season win against Houston goes a long way. I've been joking about how I think first round is a reasonable expectation, but I also thought that before I saw them play against Houston. So I really think the sky's the limit with this team because they just grew so much in three games. So how are we supposed to put a cap on how much they're going to grow and learn and learn how to play together in the next, like, 24 or so games? And it's hard to tell because we've already established Jacoby Neath isn't in the mix. You've still got guys like Steven Crowell, Ben Carlson, even Johnny Davis figuring out how to really gel together and play. They're all really new to this. And I think that's something we're going to see is we're going to only see them get stronger. I am definitely confident in the fact that Johnny Davis is going to continue to be a star for this team. But games aren't won by one person. And Johnny Davis will tell you that. He is all about talking about how it's team-oriented, and he couldn't have done it without X or X. Or he was called by Randy Bennett, St. Mary's coach. He was called one of the best defensive guards in college basketball. And he deflected when I asked him about it and said he thinks Tyler was a better defender than him. And so I think they have a lot of good pieces. And by the end of the season, I think we could truly be seeing, as Jim Polzine called it, a quote-unquote juggernaut team. I think no one really expected them to be good this early, and good is relative. How do they play against the Big Ten? How do they play against EJ Liddell, Hunter Dickinson, Kofi Coburn, and whoever else? That is the question, and we won't know until we really get to see them against big play. But I do think they're farther along, and they're only going to continue to get better. And the best part is that so many of them will be back next year and the year after. So we've got plenty of time to see how this team grows and figures out how to score better, maybe. But I think the sky's the limit, and we'll only continue to see that. So thanks so much for listening. We'll have another podcast next week. Also, don't know how that one's going to go, as I will be in Atlanta Tuesday through Thursday covering the Georgia Tech-Wisconsin game, which is set as an 8:15 tip as of right now. And then the Badgers will play Marquette on the 4th with an 11 a.m. tip. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.